So it's been a while since I've released a podcast in English, and today we have three times fittest Australian, James Newberry, and this podcast is awesome. I was so glad to meet James as he was in Montreal for a very short period of time, coming to train with his coach, Michelle, and so this is pretty cool. If you don't follow us on social media, we have a new Instagram. It's called The Smith Vibes. You could follow that link down in the description. There's also all the links to reach out to James' social media accounts and his CrossFit gym, which is Soul 360 Adelaide. Not but not least, I'll let you hear the rest. Let me know what you think. If you want to reach out, you want to give any kind of comment on the podcast, pleasure to hear you out. Cheers.
Hey, what's up, guys? You're listening to the Smith Vibes podcast, the only bilingual podcast in the world. I'm your host, Guillaume Lafleur Smith.
Quite a little bit of podcast, right?
Yeah.
You like Zevia? Do you drink Zevia?
We don't have Zevia in Australia.
Really?
No.
Shit. If you want one, just grab which one, whatever.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's the thing. Thanks for doing this.
Mate, absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it. Awesome. I was telling Michelle that, I didn't know that she was coaching you before. Like, I saw you coming over.
Yeah.
And I was telling her, I really like James. I find that he's a guy that's quite different compared to the other athletes. Yep. I don't know if you've been told this once in a while.
Mm. Yeah, I have some. Yeah.
In a positive way, because I find that you're somebody that's that have demonstrated a certain consistency, that you've been growing up and you've been proving a bit of how like you can develop as a CrossFit athlete, and also like how you you're represented in the sport. Like, yeah. I think you're a good example.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, like a lot of people like see CrossFit as like something super intimidating and, and like big old guys, and you just seem more of like a I don't know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you know what I mean.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. It's, I guess over the course of competing since, you know, I got introduced to CrossFit in 2011. So my introduction, I was quite lucky to have a coach that was really particular in how I moved. And from there, I loved competition. Didn't know that you could compete. I didn't know what CrossFit was. I just thought it was a place that you went to train, and I was doing it only for football. I was playing football at the time, rugby league, and once I visited the gym, started doing it, fell in love with the sport, fell in love with the community, fell in love with training lots of different modalities. And then I guess since then, every year I've slightly changed the way that I approach training, the way I approach recovery, and also looking at the bigger picture and looking at longevity. So that's what I talked to Michelle quite a lot about, is I don't want to do the sport. I don't want to do the sport and then be, you know, buckled by the time I'm 50 years old or 45 right. years old. I'd rather think about longevity. And I think there's a balance that you can find between training really hard as a professional athlete and doing CrossFit, which is a very mixed bag of things. Like, we're weightlifting, you're swimming, you're running, you're riding, you're doing all these things in short and long distances at high intensities and low intensities. And if we solely just do that all the time, I don't feel like that's the best recipe for longevity. So that was hence the reason why I started taking a different approach to recovery, really trying to look after my body at the same time. And knowing that I can do that puts my mind more at ease, knowing that I will still be very functional and be able to, you know, work autonomously when I'm 70, 80, 90 years old. And that's what I wanted to implement into my gym, hence the change.
So across those years, like since 2011 to now, was there a bit, what's the history behind that of like how you were coached by, did you have a coach and you probably followed different types of programs, or just like, did you like use a program and just go with that, or you always wanted somebody behind?
Yeah. And in the beginning, I did it myself. I kind of just, you know, just worked on strength in a regular gym and worked on cardio just down by the beach, cause I lived near the beach, and did a lot of running. So that was basically what I did. from there, leading into, so 2011, I started CrossFit about 2 weeks before the Open started. So I was introduced basically straight into the Open. I didn't, never heard about it. When I went to the gym, and like my second week of being at the gym, learning what CrossFit was, and at that time I was basically cleaning the gym and mopping the floors and cleaning the bathrooms and stuff for membership, because I just moved to Sydney. I had no money, but I wanted to be a part of a gym. And from there, they said, oh, the Open, this is the first year they're doing a worldwide Open. And that was 2011. And they just like,
yeah, right. But you were, you got into there kind of that year.
Yes.
Oh shit. So you were just like right in the, when it just got born, right?
Yep. Pretty well. And I was like, what's that? And they're just like, oh, this is a, like an online competition where you can compete in these workouts. And I was like, really?
So you're competitive. So
yeah, I was like, I'll do that. That sounds great. So I was like, back then it was $5. You could sign up for $5. And I got like hammered. I got smoked. I was like 1,280 or something in out of 2,000 or 2,200 males in the country. And I just thought to myself, far out, 1,280. There's no way that there's 1,200 dudes fitter. And I was like, that blew my mind. And I was like, because at the time I thought I was reasonably fit. I used to do a lot of running, used to do a lot of lifting, and I thought it would compile quite well. So I was like, oh man, I'm going to give this a crack. So then I started just training. I learned a lot from my coach at the time, Mick, who's Australian Regionals Director.
Okay.
So I learned a lot from him. Had a good foundation of strength and aerobic work, which I loved. I loved mixing that all together naturally. It just wasn't just sticking to the gym or just sticking to aerobic capacity stuff. And playing football, I love to push myself and I love to train. So then at the end of that year, so in, I think, December, I moved back to Adelaide. And then I was getting prepared for the 2012 Open, which I was really excited for. That year, they were taking 60 to the 60 to the regionals, not 40 or 30. And I made, I think I was 47th place. Nice. So I made it to regionals.
Second year of CrossFit.
Yeah. Well, right at the end of my first year. So it was like, I needed to learn the skills. Like I had the strength at that particular time to be good enough to be in that realm. And I probably had the aerobic capacity to be in that realm. I just didn't have the skills to piece it together.
Hmm.
So I didn't know at the time, I didn't know how to overhead squat properly, like really well, like 40 kilos was hard. I didn't know how to butterfly pull up. I only just learned how to kipping pull up. I didn't know how to toast the bar. Strict handstand push-ups were non-existent. So all those skills I learned during that course of that next year and built capacity and strength and all together. And then out of that regionals in 2012, I came ninth. So that was like, okay, I really like this sport. This is really cool. And basically from there, I was just doing my own training. I was just, you know, doing kettlebell swings in my front yard and then running around the block.
Because there wasn't a gym in Enderley.
Well, there was, but it was too far to travel to go. It was more like a 30-minute drive.
Okay.
So I was just like, I can do it myself. So I would go down to the CrossFit gym and do my Open workouts there. But then all my other training I mainly did by myself, just at home or down the beach or in like a regular Globo gym. Just like strength stuff, like sets of 100, back squats at 100 kilos, things like that.
And at the time, there wasn't like that much online like coaches or knowledge. It was kind of, everybody was figuring it out. Like, I think there was Outlaw, Invictus.
Yeah. That's that was the big one back then. Outlaw. Yeah. I remember that. Far out.
That smashed my back. Like,
yep.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. So I just play around. Sometimes I'd see a workout somewhere and you maybe hit that in the gym. A lot of the times I'd just make it up myself. And then I wanted to really do well in 2013. I trained harder and harder to try and do better at regionals. And I was like, oh, well, if I improve by that much, maybe I can improve by that much again and, you know, go to the games. And so I kept trained more than I did the year before. I just opened my gym in March 2013. And so I was training in there when the Open started. Basically, the first week of the Open in 2013 was the weekend that I opened my gym. So each week I was doing the Open, training a lot, getting prepared for regionals. Made regionals again in 2013 and then went to the regionals and came 11th. And I was like, what the hell? I was like, I'm so much better than what I was last year. Why have I gone from 9th to 11th? And then that's when I decided that I needed to get someone to program for me. And so then I contacted Rob at Raw Strength and Conditioning.
All right.
And yeah, he was doing programming. And the volume that I was then exposed to was so much more than I'd previously been doing.
Oh, it was more.
A lot more.
Oh, really? Sometimes I also often hear the other way around, like people play too much and they're not doing enough.
Yeah, I think these days that's probably the case. But back then I was, you know, just doing, you know, maybe 90 minutes a day of training. And then that was kind of me. And maybe I jump in on the class workout for 10, 15 minutes, maybe at right at the very end of the day. But then from there, I got on, and basically when I was halfway through his program, that's when I'd normally be finishing my session. So it was more like 3 hours of training. And I remember doing the very first session, like vividly remember getting a workout and thinking, holy, like this is so heavy. This is like really hard. And it was like opening my eyes to what I need, what was necessary. So then in 2014, I went to regionals and I came fourth. So that was when they were taking three to the games, and I came fourth. It was 2 points, I believe it was in it. I think it was, it'd been a difference of in the final workout, I had to win that workout, which I did. But then I had to have Khan had to place like fifth or worse. And I think he came third in that workout, third or fourth. So I missed out by 2 points and, you know, all of 4 or 5 seconds. And that was like kind of devastating in one hand, but then I was also, what I'm doing is working. So 2015, I was excited to get in, rip in. Then at the end of that year, I went to, do you remember competition where they did the hurdle event? Big hurdle event, everyone kept stacking it.
Where was that?
OCT? OCC?
Yeah, ECC was in, it was in Boston by Ben?
No, and, well, wasn't
OCR?
OCT.
OCT.
OCT, it was like...
Seattle.
Orange, or it was in Orange County.
Okay, yeah, it was, okay.
And...
That's when Kevin Ogar
got... Yes, so that was happened the year before. So then they gave us a hurdle event on concrete, and I was doing this hurdle event, did it, and... During that time, I'd also hurt my knee. So prior to that event, I'd hurt my knee. Just had been doing lots of squatting, trying to get strong, just overused one knee. I got a 22 mil vertical tear in my patella. And this is like the first injury I'd ever had. Like I just, and it was just a lot of jumping, a lot of sprinting, a lot of running, a lot of lifting, and not a lot of self-care. So I was rehabbing that at the same time and already booked my flights to go to OCT and then go to Waterpalooza. That were weeks back to back.
It was the first year at Waterpalooza, I think.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, it was...
Something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. And then that was so 2015, as end of 2014, start of 2015, somewhere there. And so I was doing that event. My legs were like fairly weak just because I hadn't been able to squat with the knee. During that hurdle event, I went up on the final hurdle and I got hung up on the top of the hurdle and it like kind of flipped me back and I landed on like my back and with my hand down the ground to brace myself, and I came off the floor and I was like, oh, I'm good. And then my coach was like, oh, how's your wrist? And I was like, yeah, it's fine, it's all good. And I was moving around, it's fine. And then like an hour later, my wrist started throbbing a lot. I was like, oh, what have I done? I've hurt my wrist. And then I just braced it up, finished the competition, went to Waterpalooza the next weekend, did Waterpalooza, got home, wrist is still hurting. It was actually this wrist. Wrist is still hurting. Went and got a scan and it was like fractured in two spots, like two little fractures.
You didn't get your coracoid?
It was something like that. Something like that. And then it also, one was starting with a T, like a trapezoid or something like that.
Wrist fucks you up. Big time.
So I had a torn patella, broken wrist, and I was like, far out. Like I was stressing because I'd done well at regionals the year before in 2015. I was like, I can make the games, I can do it, I know what I need to do. And it was right in, like these two things were in my way. And so that was frustrating. Went to regionals anyway. My knee still hadn't fully healed yet. It was down to about 9 mils or 7 mils of separation. So it was getting better and I was doing lots of things to help it get better. And the wrist had healed up. I did my best to prepare. Did 2015, came 13th.
At regionals.
At regionals, yeah. Devastated. I was so angry with myself. I was angry at the situation because it was a lot of it was out of my control. I did the best I could to prepare. But yeah, I probably, you know, in hindsight, probably shouldn't have competed that year. I probably should have let it go and healed up first.
heal up long. It would have taken probably less long.
Probably.
To heal after that.
Probably. And then, so after that regionals, I was like devastated. I came 13th. My legs were just so deconditioned. I was aerobically fit. I think I was aerobically probably on par with where I was the year before, but muscularly, stamina was terrible, like in my legs in particular, because I just wasn't allowed to get volume into the legs. Like I couldn't like rebound squat or anything. I had to do static holds and things like that. And I could ride the bike as much as I liked, but that wasn't going to prepare me for, you know, 50 overhead squats at 60 kilos. I felt trash after that, and the thrusters. And so that was a bit devastating. Then I had a bit of a break after that, and I'm just like, I'm going to get prepared for 2016. Got ready for 2016, came into it, ended up second in 2016, made it to the games, was stoked.
I remember that year. It was very, like, there was a lot of emotions going around through the, like, every regional kind of had their little thing, but there was, like, some athletes.
Yeah, Brent made it for the first time.
You did?
Yeah, I did, and there was a couple other people, a lot of rookies got through that year, so.
It was kind of a year where
it was like
you good guys got a good push, huh?
Got a punch the ticket. Yeah, so it was fantastic. Like, I think preparation just went really well. I was really focused. I got a lot of work in, a lot of hard work. And yeah, it really paid off. And then each year since then, like 17 and 18, won the region, and was very happy with my preparations leading into both of those years. So I guess during the course of that time, from 11 till now, the way that I've trained has changed. The way that I look at recovery has changed. The way that I want to look at, you know, making sure my body stays healthy long term. Like if I knew that my body would break down because of what I'm doing now, in say 10 or 15 years, I wouldn't do it. Like I wouldn't compete. I wouldn't train as hard as what I am if that was the case.
Right.
But I feel like I'd feel a lot fitter, a lot fresher. My recovery is faster now than it is when I was 21, just because of the way that I feel like I approach my recovery and approach my training. And I guess it's just maturity, looking at the bigger picture, knowing when it's a good idea to, you know, just push through, because you do need to do that. Like if you want to go to the games, you got to push through some shit. Like you got to push through sore body. You got to push through squatting, you know, back to back to back. Sometimes you have to do that. You've got to do that stuff, but then also knowing how much working in do I need to do to combat my working out. And if you don't get it right and you're burning yourself from, you know, maybe a career standpoint, you're burning yourself from a relationship standpoint, and you're burning yourself from a competing standpoint, your bucket gets overflowed and you won't be able to bounce back from that, and you'll burn yourself out, and you might end up with glandular or chronic fatigue or adrenal fatigue. And I think at some points in time I've been fairly close to getting there, but never enough to tip me over the edge. I've always sort of taken a step back right before that's come to it.
Yeah.
But now I kind of understand where my balance is, and like I can push myself really hard now, and I can do a lot of training, get a lot of volume in, but I also know ways that make me calm down and help me find parasympathetic as much as possible whenever I'm not sympathetically training.
But it's like if you're the beginning when you didn't qualify is because you weren't doing enough, and then you were doing enough but you weren't recovering enough.
Totally.
And now it's just like you kind of found like
sweet spot,
but it probably in 2 years you'll say something else and it'll be another approach, and you're just optimizing, right?
Totally. And I think if you don't adapt and innovate and evolve the way you do things, you'll, like with your business, you'll be left doing the things that people were doing 10 years ago, and we've improved on that. So I feel like it's constant improvement and constant evolution. And who knows what I'll be doing in the next 5 years. Like I'll keep training and competing as long as it makes me happy. Right. And the instant I, you know, dread doing it and dread competing, or I don't want to do it, or I'm dragging my feet. Like I know there's points in time where I've dragged my feet because you need to, and I take that on board. But when it just doesn't, like basically when I quit football, and football was my life at that particular time, I'd been doing it for 8 or 9 years, and my goal was to make it to a professional level. And I woke up one day and I was like, I don't want to do it anymore. I just knew I didn't want to do it. So I think when I get to that point, there'll be something that'll change and I'll understand that, okay, I'm not meant to do it anymore. But at the moment, I love training. I really do love it, wholeheartedly enjoy it. I love the recovery just as much as the training. I love jumping in my float tank. I love jumping in the sauna. I love making sure that I'm eating well and fueling my body well. I like breathing. I enjoy thoroughly stretching. So,
yeah, I heard you talk about connecting with the Brian McKenzie for some breathing and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So I teed up. I connected with Brian in 2016.
Oh, really?
Right before the games. Like, it was literally, you know, 2 weeks before the games, I met Brian for the first time. I'd only heard of him in passing. And he was in the gym and he was doing some work with Annie, Thora's daughter. And where I was training, which was down in Costa Mesa leading into the games, I asked, who's that? And then it's like, oh, it's Brian McKenzie. And it's just like, oh, it's Power Speed Endurance. And I said, g'day. And he was just chatting to me about how I'm getting ready for the games. And I said, yeah, really good. And he's like, do you like ice bath and sauna? And it's like, I love them. Then I started talking about the float tank. And then he's like, come to my house. So I went to his house. We did some contrast therapy. We did some saunering, some hot and colds, along with my girlfriend, Kayla. And yeah, we got connected after that. And then he basically, I added in protocols that he was giving me to my training and added them as a, you know, either a way to improve like CO2 tolerance during sessions, or ways to improve my breath, my nasal breathing capacity outside of those sessions, and then also during aerobic sessions, learn how to control my parasympathetic and keep myself as calm and as relaxed as possible during long aerobic sessions to help improve my aerobic threshold.
Yeah, because he started using that mantra just because he really loved the fact that he had this high intensity in CrossFit, but he wanted to find that without doing the actual work of like a Metcon or like hitting yourself into a wall, and breathing has helped him.
Yeah, it's helped me immensely. Like, we did a program, lasted 6 weeks, and my aerobic and anaerobic thresholds probably went up by somewhere between 12 and 15 beats a minute, like in terms of heart rate. So I could basically, what I was holding, let's just say I was holding, you know, my aerobic threshold was around 130 beats a minute within 6 weeks. When I do programs, I do them very particular, like I'll get everything done that's on the paper. So when he wrote it down, I was doing 4 sessions a week of different breathing styles of training on top of my other program. And yeah, it went up to like 145 for my aerobic, something like that. And then also my lactate threshold, my anaerobic threshold went up by like 10 to 12, something
Holy
like that.
Holy crap.
So it was a big,
it's massive.
It was a big improvement. And I think like VO2 went from, you know, 59 up to like 65, something like that, or 64, around those areas. And that was about an 8 to 10 week block for that one, because that's when I could get the test done at the university. But I was very particular in it, and I was doing a lot more longer aerobic work during those weeks. So like 2 to 3 sessions a week, I'd be on the air bike for like 90 minutes. So I've never done that before. So that type of stuff really helped.
Holy crap. And at the same time, it's like, I don't know if you've ever done like the thing with the...
Yeah, left and right nostril.
Yeah, I tried that about a couple months ago. I have my left nose, it's a little bit crooked.
Yep.
So everything's just always blocked. But every time I use that in the morning, it's kind of thing that if you do it often, it really works. But totally. When I did it often every morning, I would totally 100% breathe better in workouts. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it does help. It does help.
With a guy like Brian, he was kind of a specialist for like that area. He's very specific to what he does. Did you ever have other guys like do like specific work with you, like 100%. An Olympic lifter or?
Yeah, totally. So I pretty much went and sourced people that were specialists in each area that I think would have helped me be a better athlete, help give me advice and give me training. So we had a local guy to Adelaide. He was Commonwealth Games Olympic lifter. So Max Dal Santo, Jordan Steffens. He's a strongman guy. He's local to Adelaide, Australia's Strongest Man. And I've worked with, a guy named Paul, He's helped me with sprinting.
Okay.
He's epic with what he does. Like, he's very particular. He's very technique focused. It's the sessions aren't super, super long or anything like that. They're quality sessions. And also like swimming, like I've gone and joined a swimming club, helped me with swimming. I went and did criterium racing on the bike because I love riding my bike, and I rode, was walking my dogs, and I saw a crit race going on and I didn't even know it was there. I was like, oh, I want to go do that. So I went and bought a bike and I went and started doing those crit races. So there was, yeah, areas. And I also really good friends with Shane Perkins. He's one of Australia's fastest sprint cyclists. He also gave me a lot of insight into cycling and power cycling and things like that. So I've been lucky enough to be able to meet a lot of people in specific areas that could help construct a well-rounded approach to my training. Not to mention, we also have a guy who trains, like he uses space at our gym for his aerial silk art. Like he trains in aerial silk, but he was Australian gymnast back when he was a junior. So he's a very good gymnast, extremely good gymnast, and he's also very good with aerial silk art. So like his moving his body in space is very good. So along the way, when we opened our gym in 2013, he kind of walked in the door and basically jumped up on the rings in his work boots and his high-vis top and jumped up and did like a nice, strict, beautiful muscle up to planche up on the rings into handstand push-up, and then like flipped his way off. And I said, all right, give me the lowdown, what's the go? And he's just like, can I rent some space from you to run my aerial silk? And I said, of course, just show me how to do that.
Let's do it.
So I've had lots of help from a lot of different people over the years, and just trying to, you know, pack as many different skills and things into my repertoire of my kit bag that I can utilize whenever I need to utilize them. Plus, I just love to learn. Like, I really enjoy learning, and you know, lucky enough, we have he was probably one of the most consistent long distance triathletes in the world, Matty White. He's been helping me along the way over the last few years with triathlon and other bits and pieces, just piecing things together, piecing my running and my riding and my swimming together in transitions, and just shedding light. I love to learn. So, and not only that, but also nutrition. Like Kayla, my girlfriend, she opened my eyes to a whole new realm of increasing performance through nutrition. Not only her, but also a guy named Ben Madden. He was epic in helping me transfer ways of working in and learning how to eat better, along with what Kayla was teaching me at the same time, and also learning how to balance my load, my stress load. So I had opened the gym, needed to work at the gym, you know, wanted to try and give Kayla and my relationship as much as I could at the same time, but then also try and train for the game. So it was about managing stress, and that was one thing that I had to learn and get good at, and he helped me do that a lot.
To just use your time more wisely and actually give some time to some priorities that are there in your life.
Totally. So learning, like taking some time just to, you know, just to breathe sometimes can be the matter. If you do that every day, it could be the difference between, you know, having an extra, you know, 10 amazing sessions before the games in 2 months time, and don't do them, and those sessions you walk into and you're flat, fatigued and low energy. Whereas if you just spend some time breathing or relaxing or, you know, earthing, whatever it may be, jumping in the float tank and visualizing those areas that give back energy, it's necessary. And I feel like if we want to teach people longevity, we want to teach our clients about longevity, just teaching them functional fitness is not the be all and end all. Teaching functional fitness is a major part. But that without teaching balance, and a lot of people don't know balance, just the same way a lot of people don't know what nutrition is about, because we never got told, you know, during school, like we were taught the pyramid, the old school pyramid, and that's completely wrong. Happy to say that out loud. It's completely wrong, and what people think is great may not be great. So having an education platform where we can shed some light on my personal experience and how mistakes I've made, things that I've done and worked well, I feel like it's a more wholesome approach and a holistic approach to getting people to move functionally, getting them strong, getting them fit and aerobically able, but then also teaching them that being social helps bring you back to parasympathetic, taking some time to learn how to breathe properly, it's good for you. Taking some time where you don't have your phone glued to your hand is good for you. You know, going down.
That's a hard one.
going down to the beach and, or going finding some grass and just sitting on the grass barefoot is good for you, whether you think it is or not. Try it. It does feel good.
And from all these people that have, like, I think you have something good going on. Like, you kind of figured out who's the key persons for each aspect of what you need. But is there, like, I bet that, like, a CrossFit coach or, like, the coach that you have right now, Michelle, for, like, the games, is she more of, like, a bit of the lead coach out there? She's kind of, like, but do you still give her, like, some feedbacks from all these other people that are helping you?
Yeah, totally. Totally. So Michelle is, like, she's my go-to. Like, she does the bulk of my training. Like she will write the bulk of my sessions.
She did that. Like when I started CrossFit, she was my boss.
Yep.
In 2013, and she was like that. She would, like, go see all these different people and.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah,
it makes me think about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I like what Michelle. Like, Michelle, as you know, Michelle's a fantastic swimmer, so she can write really good swimming programs. She's a guru with Olympic weightlifting. She's fantastic. She's been in the games 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's amazing. She knows exactly what to do. So, but she'll ride in sessions, like, when I want to go do, like, she knows that I love going down. Like, there's nothing I like more than training with groups of people. I love training with people. I love sharing the fitness. She knows that on a Saturday afternoon that I love getting a group of the guys from the gym, like, whether it be 5 or 10 people, and going down to West Lakes and doing a triathlon. She knows I enjoy that a lot. And so she'll write, go to a triathlon with your buddies, pick your distances that you like, probably around about here and here and here, and enjoy. So she'll write the bulk of the sessions. Like, all my Olympic weightlifting is done by her, all my gymnastics, my metabolic conditioning, all that stuff, all those things are done by Michelle. And then when I say, okay, well, I'm going to go do club swim, she'll just write in swimming session, and then I'll go do my club swim, and the club guys, they write the program and I follow in with what they do. And when I go do, say, a track session outside of what Michelle writes, if I go do a technique-based session where I have someone sitting there watching me in Adelaide, then I'll do what they get me to do. But then Michelle will also give me those sessions where I need them, and she'll write the programs for them. So she knows when I'm going, you know, to club, or I'm going out to see Maddie White for some triathlon stuff, and I'll add in those things when those people are available to see me, just because it just adds extra tools to my kit. But Michelle will write the bulk. She knows what I'm doing, and it's good to always get, like, coming here this week and spending a week with Michelle to get her to watch me train is fantastic, because it gives her so much more insight into
the first time that you did this. Yeah.
Yeah. So it gives her a lot more insight onto what I'm like as an athlete and how she can better coach me when I'm in competition as well, not just in training. So she knows what will make me feel good. She knows how I need to warm up for a specific event. She knows where I tend to, you know, either make a right decision or a particularly, like, or maybe not a correct decision, and it gives her better ideas on how to structure things for me. So getting face to face with her is great.
Yeah.
And getting face to face with people to watch me while I'm at home is good too, just because it gets eyes on me and I can learn. So I think it's all about learning. If you decide that you know everything and you stop learning, you won't get any better.
I love the fact that you said that, because, like, it makes somebody so much more humble, just because they're comfortable with, like, knowing that somebody knows something better in there. And I don't know if it's the fact that it's a woman. I don't know if, like, maybe men deal a bit more with ego or stuff like that. Mm. I feel that it could be, like, something similar like that. How was the shift, like, from Raw to Michelle? Was it something that you kind of, like, planned, or if you can talk about
it? Yeah,
or,
totally, of course. So basically what I did was I was with Raw, and then after Raw, I absolutely nothing against Raw whatsoever. Like, mm-hmm. I'm still good friends with Rob. Like, he's one of my best mates. I just needed to change just for myself. Yeah. I just needed to change things up. I was just,
after all those years, like, yeah, sometimes exactly. You just need other eyes.
100%. And that's all it really was. And like, I was quite worried to tell him that, but like, he took it really well. Like, it's just for me, I just needed to change some things up just for my own personal sanity.
And then it's like if you're always training yourself and you needed somebody to program for you, but it's the same thing. I feel like this. You could see different types of. You could probably have like five coaches. They all would all write a workout.
Yeah.
And you could probably guess.
Yeah.
Who wrote which program?
Totally.
So
that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And so after that, I actually went and spent a year. So leading into the 2018 season, I went and trained with Tia and Shane.
Okay, yeah, I saw all those videos of you guys.
So I moved, basically I moved up there for 6 weeks during the Open, and then went home for a couple of weeks, and then went back and did the lead into the regionals up at Gladstone with Tia and Shane. And Shane was coaching me at that point in time. And basically Tia and I was training partners for leading into that season and leading into the 2018 games. And then when Tia and Shane moved to Cookeville, it was just not going to add up in terms of time. Because I never want to take away from what Tia and Shane have going on. I was basically there because I needed to be training with someone who was as keen as I was to train. And that was a perfect fit. And yeah, we get along great.
Yeah.
So, and I get along with Shane as well fantastically. So that was a really good fit. And I'm glad Kayla made the phone call to Shane to say, hey, can James come up? Because he's not training at the moment and he's all.
Oh, she did that.
Yeah, she
knew you.
Yeah, she was just like, I was at that point in time. Like, I was looking at it, thinking I'm not competing this year.
Motivation, stress, stuff like that.
All of the above.
Yeah.
And then, like, I wasn't probably the most pleasant to be around. So, Kayla just said, "I'm gonna call Tia and Shane, and you're gonna go up there," because she knew that I got along well with them, because I got along really well with Tia in the invitationals and at the games. So, I spent some time up there, and that was great. But when Tia and Shane moved to Cookeville, Tia would be preparing for like when the change of CrossFit season changed and there was sanctionals involved, trying to get Tia ready for a particular sanction event, which was different from the sanction event that I was going to choose. It would have added more stress and complication to doing a program specifically for me and then one specifically for Tia. So it didn't quite add in, and yeah, I didn't want to take away from what they were doing. So we both like mutually agreed that I needed to do something different, which was fine. And I still get along with them great. They're still like my best mates. So I instantly, after that, I thought of Michelle, because I'd met Michelle at the Invitational. I met her at the games. I saw how she interacted with, a couple of athletes down in the, Australian region. And I'd obviously seen what the type of workouts that she was giving Pat. And I was just like, that's awesome. So I instantly emailed Michelle and I said, hey, can you coach me? I need some help. And she said yes, which was fantastic. And yeah, she's been programming for me since. And basically from that, it's just been a whole different approach to what I've been used to, which is fantastic. Like during this Open that's just passed,
it's quite a journey, huh?
Yeah, I kind of needed to take a little bit of a break so I could focus on my renovations at my gym. And she's like, that's okay, you can do that, that's fine. Just here's the date that we need to get cracking. She's like, do what you can during this period. If it's just work, it's just work. If you can get in some training. But at this point in time, we need to get you going for the games so you're ready. And I liked that a lot. And then she's very open. She's like, come up to Montreal, you can stay with me. And
how do you like it up to now?
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. It's really good. It's a little bit chilly, but
yeah,
it's okay. Like, we just went up to Saguenay,
yeah.
And
yeah,
it was, yesterday was beautiful weather. It was probably
beautiful out there.
It was like maybe 19 degrees.
Beaches though.
No beaches, but
yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah,
we got in some really good training. And
would you prefer here or the States?
Here.
Really?
Totally.
Like the lifestyle, or just like, yeah, the people, how they are. It's weird because when I travel, every time I travel, I always feel that I just get more along with either Australians or Europeans,
sure,
or Canadians.
Sure.
It's just kind of like a blend that's different.
Yeah, there are places in America that I do enjoy training. I think it really depends on the
place.
Well, it depends on the people that I'm with.
Mm-hmm.
It really is people dependent. If I've got a great environment of people around me, I'll train anywhere. Yeah. As long as the people that I'm around are, you know, positive people and they're
good
keen,
vibes only.
Yeah, good vibes only. And yeah. if they're keen to train and they want to have a crack and they want to do fun stuff and if they like coffee, then sure.
Yeah.
I'm in. But coming here has been really good. Like I got to train with Sam and I got to train with Laura. So that was really fun.
Different people that you never trained with.
100%. I never trained with those guys before and they're fantastic and super nice and they're keen to train and keen to have a good time. And at the moment, like back in the day, I was just happy to grind away in the gym by myself solo. But now I wouldn't want to do that. Like now I much prefer sharing fitness and doing it with other people and having a good time doing it. I'm much fitter for it, that's for sure.
Back home, do you train alone all the time? Or like, obviously you have your group, but
yeah.
Will it be solely sessions where you'll be by yourself?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It could happen.
Right? Yeah, that's part and parcel. But I'm happy to do that too. Like those are okay. But as long as I can, you know, each day try and get something in with other people, that does help me a lot. Like maybe every day I might do a session that's coinciding with my cousin Simone or another guy in the gym or a few other guys in the gym. They're doing sessions at the same time, but we might be doing different stuff, but we're still bouncing off each other anyway and we're just chatting and having a good time and everyone's training, so it's cool. But
when you've been doing it for so long, like that's what you need, just to not think about it too much.
100%. Yeah. Like just it's just still trying to refine areas that I need to work on and doing it in an environment that keeps me happy. Like if I do it and I have to drag my feet into the gym because it's not a fun thing to do anymore, that's probably when I don't want to do it anymore. Like I want to make it as fun as possible. And at the moment I'm having a lot of fun. Like 2018 training and 2019 training have been so far the best, most fun. It's progressively making it more fun and interesting for me. Just kind of the way that I felt about training back when I first, you know, started Raw. It was like it was fun and it was new and it was interesting and it was keeping me mentally stimulated. So now I have to try and keep myself mentally stimulated, which is why I wanted to do the Ironman.
Freaking Ironman, huh? Mm. And let's dive in a little bit more into your gym. Like I'm super curious of like you're as much as an athlete as you're an entrepreneur, as I can see. Like you've opened your gym quite early in your beginning of CrossFit. You knew that that's what you wanted.
Yep.
So you probably transitioned, and then what's the new concept? I'm very curious about that. Yeah.
So in the beginning, I opened the gym 2013, and it was basically right up the WOD, take the people through the WOD, and you know teach them functional fitness, teach them CrossFit. And from there, as I evolved as an athlete and as a person to start doing different things that made me feel better as an athlete, it didn't progress at the same rate. Like we tried to make things, you know, the same, like things that I was interested in, I would try and implement into the gym. I'm a big smoothie fan, so I wanted to get a smoothie bar in the gym. I'm a big float fan, so we had 3 float tanks at one point. And then
you still have them?
We have one. Always will have one. It was just getting too busy. It's too flat out. And then when we moved gyms, we didn't have the room for 3 tanks.
Well, so you moved? That in this past year?
No, this is 2017.
Okay.
So I wanted to... Basically, the way that I see it is everything that I do and anyone does as an elite athlete, it will help it'll help everybody. It just doesn't help the elite athlete. It'll help people from the everyday office worker to the everyday weekend warrior. I just feel like the degree that they use it is different. So I believe there's probably a stigma saying that, you know, only elite athletes can go get, you know, massage. Only elite athletes can go get regular treatment. Only elite athletes can go use a cryo. Only elite athletes can go use a float tank or, you know, a sports psychologist or whatever it is that helps elite athletes be better. People in the everyday public can utilize these things. It's just to the degree that they use them. So that was the idea behind it. So the things that I've used to help me become healthier, fitter, stronger, more mentally prepared, I feel like people could use them. And that's what I wanted to implement into Seoul, is a way to help create balance and education. So as I progressed on and I started introducing these elements to make me better, they didn't all get introduced into the gym at the same time, because I really wanted to vet them and make sure that they were things that were going to help people. So
you're investing quite a lot into some things that are out of the ordinary, and the regular, like, there's not any supposed to be, but clearly the
totally. Well, for instance, with Soul, so we were CrossFit Mode, and then we kind of moved it to Mode Fitness, and now I wanted to really open it up and create an environment that was as holistic as I possibly could, and that catered for absolutely everybody, and then also was not just a gym, but a place that people could come and be social. So I don't think there's anything that I love more than being social over a coffee. So we introduced the espresso bar. So that's awesome, we've got the Soul bar there, which is, you can go get, you know, if you want a macchiato, get a macchiato. You want a latte, you want almond latte, you want a cappuccino. Sure, you can come in, you can get a coffee, you can have a chat to your friends before you train. You can chill out, you can relax, you can do it after you train, whatever you want to do. That's, I want people to hang out and enjoy and feel like they're a part of something outside of their work, which they may not enjoy that much. It's a place where they feel welcome and they can feel a sense of community. And that in itself is such a big part to mental health for a lot of people, that I think if we can help with that, that's teaching longevity. That's learning, that's teaching people better habits. It's getting people outside of their regular, you know, monotony. And I think that goes a long way in keeping people healthy. So that was one side of it. I wanted it to be just as much a common social community espresso bar style feeling as well as a gym. It's not a gym with an espresso bar attached, and it's not an espresso bar with a gym attached. It's both. And I feel like that's a cool place that I would want to be around.
Man, I would love that so much. Like one of the nicest concepts I would think about, because like you say, if you appreciate it, like, probably other people are going to appreciate it.
There's some common ground. There, like, people, and I've always felt that way. There's, you know, if you like a particular style of art, guaranteed there's someone else out there that likes that particular style of art too. So
chances are, if I go to Australia and like there's like a tons of gyms and I see like all these things that are in it, and then I see this at your gym and they're all things that I like, most likely that's where I'm gonna go.
100%. Yeah. And that's the idea. So we have those two elements, but then as part of the, you know, recovery or yin side of the facility, it's like the espresso bar, the smoothie bar, the deck. You can go out and sit in the sun, get some sunlight.
Oh, you guys have a deck?
Yeah, got the deck.
And are then, you close to the beach? Or?
We're in the city, so 15 minutes. Not far. It's very close. I could ride my bike there in 15 minutes. And then we also have the massage therapist. We have the float tank. We have like the Normatec compression boots. And then we have like the Myo and stuff. And then we have the complexes and stuff like that. So people can chill out and relax.
Have people, like, sorry to be like, I don't want to be in bad vibes, but have people been like... Obviously, your members have must have been like super happy about those changes and modifications. But has other people from around you like kind of discouraged you or been negative about like saying like, oh, it's not going to work?
Yeah, there's been times, like, whether they know that I know or not, I do know, and I know who, and I know exactly the people that said, oh, it'll never work, and they're going way too big, way too quick.
Yeah, exactly. Rah, rah,
rah. But I don't know. There's a sense
you believe it, right?
Yeah, there's a sense of. I feel like I know what's going to work, and if it doesn't work, I'll try something different. Simple as that. It's just trial and error, but it's a calculated risk that I take up, because my dad is a full-time employee of mine.
Oh, really?
He's our manager, so
that's awesome.
I wouldn't do anything that put his job in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Well, not enough to really, you know, make it really risky,
right.
But I only want it to progress and get better, and a lot of the times it's for him too, so... I want to be able to create an environment where he can work and be healthier and live a longer time and have a healthier lifestyle. So that's a big part of it as well.
So all these decisions, they're taken pretty much like the ideas are from you. You share it a bit to the people with who you work, and
correct.
You see like if it's a good blend.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then aside from the yin style, we also have a ROM WOD corner where people can ROM WOD any time of the day from 5:30 until 8 p.m. at night or 8:30, which is fantastic. But then as for classes, so we were running only CrossFit classes before. So now we call them strength and conditioning. Just broadens it up and it just helps to alleviate some of the, maybe some of the vibes that they get from instantly hearing the name CrossFit. So strength and conditioning, we still run like 42 of those classes a week. But then on top of that, we've added in about another 10 classes on top that are slightly modified. Well, not slightly, they're quite drastically modified. So we run an endurance class, we run a barbell class, we run a build class, which is a bodybuilding class.
Nice.
We do a kids, we do a juniors. So juniors is like a kindergarten, so 3 and 4 year olds. We have a kindergarten across the road, which we teach 4 times a week. So they come in and have a blast for 30 minutes. And they just go back to back, so it's an hour, so it's 2 30-minute classes of 2 different groups of kids.
Do you give those classes?
No, I don't. I don't. We have
exhausting.
We have some amazing coaches that can do a much better job at those types of classes than I can. So I'm happy to concede and say that they're better at those than I am. I watch them go on though. I do, like, I'm usually training while those classes are on, so I get to see them playing, which is great because it's all about games at that point in time.
A lot of happiness in the air.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of laughing, a lot of games, a lot of, we're doing fitness, but they don't know it. So, and then we also do kids, and then teens. So there's 3 different age groups there. And then we also do, on top of that, we do something, we do a SoulFit class, which is like 45 minutes of very lightweight, super lightweight, but more like high intensity interval work, which is a good way to progress into doing CrossFit if CrossFit is somewhat intimidating or strength and conditioning is intimidating, or if you just don't want to lift heavy weights, you just want to come in and get a sweat on and get going. We've got that class as well. Then we also have, just because in recent times I've been quite attracted to triathlon, and a lot of people in the gym, sometimes they just want to get out and go for a run or go for a ride or go for a swim. We do swims on Thursdays, which is it's not really a super coached class. It's like we set a program and people just gather as a group at the gym and head down to the pool, which is a 200-meter walk from the gym, go for a swim. Then we also do...
You could have an espresso on the way there.
100%. Yeah. And that's what it's about. It's about making it a fun thing to do. It's like, I'm going to go meet up with a group of people that I love to hang out with, have a coffee and do some training. It's great. And then we also do ride club and run club as well. So ride is 6 a.m. On Sunday mornings. We go for a ride for like 50, 55 minutes.
6 a.m., eh?
Yep. I think getting up at the same time every day is, for me, it's quite crucial. Get up at the same time, go to bed at around the same time, and it helps me get into better flow. Plus, it helps me feel more less fatigued. So get up at the same time every day, regardless of whether it's weekend or not. So we do ride, then we go straight into run. So run club, and then we go for a run for about 45, 50 minutes. And each of those sessions is just different in terms of like whether they're intervals or long aerobic pieces, and they're coach classes. So ride, run, and then that flows into 8 a.m. soul stretch. So we also run a soul stretch, which is just pure yin passive stretching. We do that class 5 times a week at the moment, probably up it because it's such a popular class, and it's just guided stretching and they're very passive. There's no crazy holds or like super difficult poses. It's all just like, you know, hip openers, chest openers, back openers, things that just lengthen out the muscles and get people just, you know, nice and relaxed and very, get them into parasympathetic. But on Sunday mornings, we call that coffee and stretch. So I make everyone a coffee after run, and then we sit down and the people that want the coffee, we can sit down and we can stretch to some nice relaxing music. If people want to chat, they can chat a little bit. Normally they don't chat. Everyone just sits and relaxes and, you know, falls asleep in each pose for 45 to 60 minutes, depending on what we're doing. And then that'll flow into weightlifting. Then that'll flow into endurance on a Sunday. So our Sundays are super fun. Like, they're really popular. And we basically, yeah, we do 5 classes back to back to back to back. And some people like to join in for a few of those classes. Some people come for one. Some people stay for the whole time if they want to stay for the whole time. But for me, it's about balancing, you know, long. It's not just all about the high intensity work all the time. It's about getting them to come in, experience new things, learn new things, be okay with doing a long aerobic session as well as doing a high intensity class, as well as sitting down and doing nothing and stretching for 40 minutes. That's the idea, and that's what I like to do. I think that's what's helped me find balance and made me feel more energetic, more bouncy out of bed, and I feel like I can try and portray that. I feel like other people will cling to that too, and you know, we'll keep progressing and keep evolving. Like there's more classes that I'd like to do. Oh, we also do self spin too. So that's like a spin class inside on the bike ergs and the assault bikes.
The bike ergs.
And the assault bikes.
Oh yeah.
All the air bikes. So we do that as well.
It's crazy because like just the fact that everything that you kind of do at the gym is like things that you really enjoy. So it makes me think of, oh, you're not trying to find what the people need. You know, you're doing it and you're just representing that through whatever you can offer to the people.
100%. I think it broadens it. It also gives people an option. It gives them more, an outlet. If they don't feel like coming in and hitting a strength and conditioning class, like a regular strength and conditioning class, and they feel like coming in and jumping on the bike and doing the spin class, sweet, and whatever makes you happy. And if they look forward to that and that gets them going, then that's what I want to offer. And I like it myself. Like I enjoy doing all those different types of classes, and I do them in my training myself. Like I'll take the time to sit down and stretch and breathe, and I'll take the time to go out and do long aerobic pieces, and I'll take the time to go swimming and riding and running and
just real walk the talk, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I wanted to offer.
And just the fact that your father's there, I mean, that means you must have a lot of trust in the people that you brought in on your team, right?
100%. So our team is so good at the moment. Like in the past,
it's kind of changed.
Yeah. So in the past, like it's been like, you know, it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And then you refine and you find and you get better at refining it. And now we have 12 coaches, and they do, some of them may do
full-time.
Or not all full-time, some part-time, some like casual, some like full-time. So they take a mix of classes. So we have like some people just take the kids classes. Some people take a mix of the soul stretch and maybe the soul fit. And then some people take a mix of strength and conditioning, barbell, endurance. Some people take only those ones. It just depends. But we have a team of about 12 coaches and they are fantastic. They all are so good at what they do. And I'm so happy with the team that we currently have.
Do they only coach or do they also do other tasks in the gym?
No, they basically, they take PTs as well, but that's their own thing. So we allow them to take PTs off their own bat if they'd like to take PTs, and they don't pay rent for that. They just do it. I'd rather see them, like my goal with my coaches is to, I want to be able to create a place where they can make a career. Like I don't want them to use it as a stepping stone to something else. If they want to make what they do as coaching a professional thing for them and make it a career, I want to be able to set the platform for that. So I want them to be able to make an income where they're comfortable to travel, where they're comfortable to buy a house, where they're comfortable to buy a car, where they're comfortable to do it for as long as they like. I don't want it to just be that part-time thing that they do on the side while they're figuring out the rest of their life.
That's what most gyms are all about. It's just like just a step, right?
Yeah. We're trying to look at a bigger picture, and I know some of our coaches really want to do that as a career, and I don't see why that can't be an option. And so we're now trying to progress it into a point where we can make that available to them. So just going to take a little bit of time, but if they hang in there, we can make it happen.
Nice. And I've seen that your girlfriend is also involved into the gym.
Yep.
And you guys have this nutrition program.
Yeah.
That looks awesome. I mean, I don't know really what it's about, but yep. I feel that nutrition is a little bit like training, like it evolves across time, and it's like CrossFit. You can't always do the same thing. How did that work out?
Yeah, there's no cookie cutter approach to that at all. So
you count macros? Do you?
It's a bit of everything. It's not just about counting macros. Basically, this is Kayla's business.
Okay.
I am just an ear for soundboard. I'm a soundboard for her, but this is...
You follow it as well.
Yeah, she helps me. Yeah. So basically with the method's something that Kayla created. She had tried and tested it back in the day in like 2014 with some clients, and she really loved it. And she was the one who introduced me to looking at...
At the gym that you were... Okay.
Yeah. And basically what it is, if we were to look at it for what it really is, it's an online coaching platform. And this online coaching platform helps to educate people, not just on nutrition, counting macros, looking at micros, looking at nutrient dense food, looking at better food options, looking at ways to make people feel better, but also to allow people to have someone to talk to about, you know, why they feel a particular way about food, why they emotionally eat, why they don't feel good in the morning. And if we look at how we are brought up through school, there's nowhere that you can really go to get good nutrition advice or education other than going and doing a tertiary degree. So if you want to know more about nutrition, you kind of got to go study nutrition. But if you want somewhere to go to learn like what a macro is, like what a macronutrient is, you have to go, like some people don't even know what to look up. It's just like they don't know. So this is just as much as a coaching platform as an education platform as it is, you know, a performance enhancing program. This helps people really get the most out of their food to make them be better athletes, to be better at their careers, to be better at being a mom or a dad, or, you know, it's very holistic in the way that she does it. And she wants it to emulate what she feels is the best way to go about it, like anybody else. Like everyone has, you know, their own idea on what is good nutrition and what is bad nutrition, and
everybody thinks they eat good, right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're closed-minded about it, you just see your way as being the best, whereas Kayla and my opinions, we're open to learning new things. Like we don't know it all, but we know that we can help people progress and step forward to being better. So with nutrition, there is, you know, particular clients that may just want to feel better, or they come to Kayla's program because they want to lose weight, or they come to Kayla's program because they want to be prepared for an Olympic lifting competition and be at a particular weight for that. Or they want to, like, kind of like me, they want to just have peak performance in training and feel good and be able to bounce back and recover fast. Or they're on the road a lot and they don't want to blow out when they're on the road, so they need someone to talk to help them through sticky situations where you get caught up and you just don't know what to do. Or like me, when I set myself up with a coach like Michelle, I could put together WODs and strength and stuff like that, but I don't want to think about it because yes. Someone looking from the outside in is probably going to have less emotional attachment to how it should be done and will give me probably a better program. It will give me a better program, so I'm doing it. It's the same type of thing with nutrition. It's setting you up to plan for success, and putting a plan in place helps you to succeed. And I think everyone that does their nutrition from a particular angle, whether you're doing it with this company or this company or this company, at the end of the day, they're all working towards trying to make that client feel better, lead them towards their goals, and give them more than just macros. But it's very broad in what she does. It's very cool. They do count macros, they do look at micros, they do all that type of stuff for them. If they want a nutrition plan, they can take a nutrition plan if they want. But it's really up to the client to decide. It's helping them make the decisions. And it's being a soundboard for the client to talk to and to reflect on how they're approaching certain things. And sometimes it's just an education thing. Some people love just being saying, tell me what to eat, when to eat it, and they'll get great results. And that's what they like. Some people want to have a glass of wine and go out for dinner and let go a little bit in that respect and then get back on track on, you know, Monday. Sure. Whatever's going to work for you best.
It's kind of like the same approach as like Michelle has with like your training. She knows that you'll like something. So their approach of that business is focus on whatever people like and how that could make them work best, right?
100%. That's exactly right. And I think that's why it's been so successful.
What do you do now? How was your approach like, across all those years? Did you like follow a strict diet at some point? Did you get a meal plan, or were you just kind of like that Rich Froning, like just eating peanut butter?
No, I'm not like that. While I've been here in Montreal, I've been experiencing the culture of food here, which yes. is cool. So it's very different. Yeah. And I've never been to Canada before, apart from Toronto, which is a very fast trip. So I've let myself eat a little bit, you know, out there while I'm here. But normally I try and just stick to an approach that I'm quite a chronic under eater. So I don't eat a lot. And sometimes, and it does work for me.
You forget about it, right?
Yeah, okay. It does.
You're one of those.
Yeah, I do forget about it, but now I'm consciously...
You'll have a bad training session if you didn't eat enough, right?
Yeah, sometimes. So now I'm conscious about when I should eat and when I shouldn't eat. So I know that I usually roughly, say on average, I have between 38 and 4,000 calories a day.
4,000.
I bet
with all that training.
Yeah, so it's not a crazy gross amount or anything like that, but I try and space that into a window of eating during the day. So during the morning, I like to fast for a little while. In the morning, I don't like to eat when I initially get up in the morning, and that works well for me. Like, I feel good, and I feel good in training.
Do you train on an empty stomach?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Just depending on what it is. If I know that I'm going into a heavy, heavy lifting session, I need to have something in me just because I feel lightheaded. But if I'm going out and doing aerobic work, like if I do Sunday mornings and I'm going out taking the crew for a bike ride, then I'm going for a run and then I'm doing stretch, I won't eat until the end of that. So that's 3 hours. And I won't eat until the end of stretch. So that's like 9:30-ish. So, but if I'm getting up and I know I've got a heavy lifting session, then I'll need to get something into me before I do that, just because I want to be able to, like, I need something where I feel lightheaded when I'm front squatting or cleaning or snatching. So for me, and it also changes for me as I go through periods of the year where volume and intensity increases, and when it goes down, and in my off season, I don't need to eat as much, not ridiculous amounts. And then when I get back into like maybe a strength gaining period and I wanted to add a little bit of size and strength, maybe I'll go up a little bit more. But for me, it's really about quality. It has to be about quality. It is about macros as well, because I need to hit my macros. I do feel better when I do get it very close to my macro targets, and I noticeably feel better, so I want to do that. But then it's not just eating whatever to fit those macros. I'll try and eat as much stuff grown from the ground, as little processed food as possible, stuff that's good for my gut, making sure I'm trying to get antioxidants and vitamins and minerals in, and putting salt with my water, and all the things that do add up to make me feel good and make me feel confident in the preparation that I put in. Sometimes confidence is all you need at the end of the day. And if I do those things and I'm feeling great, then I know I've laid a very good foundation for putting it all on the line when I get to the games. And knowing when I get to the games, I have to up what I do, because I'm not just burning energy during workouts. I'm burning energy thinking about the next workout, burning energy worrying, or burning energy, nervous energy, making sure I can combat that as much as possible. That's when nutrition plays a very big role.
I feel like, so was it always like that, or did you kind of like struggle at some point where you needed that help that you're receiving right now?
Totally.
And was it at the games or?
Well, yeah. So my first year at the games, I chronically under-eated.
Fuck.
under-ate, should I say. And I just wasn't having enough, and I just felt powerless, if that makes sense. Powerless. I felt like I just didn't have the strength, even though I trained hard. I just felt like I was lacking in strength and lacking in get up and go. So we worked on it, and it's like regionals, it took me 5 years to make it to the games. It's just refining and fine tuning what I do. So, and at the end of the day, like, I don't expect myself, some things I jump into and I'm crush it straight away. Some things I jump into and it takes me longer, but I'm happy to work at it, because, I think learning and innovating and evolving in every area that I do is part of the process. So, nutrition is just one dimension, the kind of the foundation that everything is structured on, and everything that you eat turns into what you are. It's like, I want to build my cells, my muscle cells, with good quality protein. I want to build, connective tissue that's strong. I don't want to put shit in and then expect my body to perform extremely well. Like, it doesn't work like that. In my mind, it doesn't work like that. And maybe to someone else who doesn't care so much about it, that might work for them. But if I know that I'm just putting in shit all the time, the instant that I get into a workout...
Well, it's placebo, for sure.
Yeah, the instant I get into a workout and I feel shit, I'll be like, that's that shit food that I ate, you know? So it's...
You associate it to something bad,
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So I try to do the best I can in that respect, and like, I'm not perfect in any way, but I'm conscious about making sure that I'm putting in good quality food in, you know, varieties of colors and varieties of different things, and trying to eat constantly with the seasons, and and understanding that the gut is a big factor in determining how you feel, how you function, how you assimilate, how you break down food, and how your immune system functions and how fast you recover. And at the end of the day, I want to recover fast so I can train again. And if all those things are on point in the systems, like every system inside our body, they're not individual systems. They all work together. So you can't treat it like this part works by itself over here and has no effect on this part over here. So I want, and I think the basis of all that is like the gut. And I feel like if I can put things in to my gut that is, you know, healthy for that to operate properly, my brain will operate properly, my sleep will be optimized. And if sleep's optimized, my recovery is optimized. And if that's optimized, then my performance in training is optimized. And then my competition is the best I possibly can do. And at the end of the day, go out there and do my best effort, regardless of anything, just give my best. It is what it is.
Have you been into juicing, like healthy shots and stuff like that?
Oh, or like cold press juicing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a cold press juicer.
That's awesome.
I do like juicing. Juicing is good.
For your gut, yeah.
100%. Like my favorite juice is just pure beetroot and mint. Simple, so simple. Beetroot, mint, and maybe a bit of ginger or turmeric.
I think I have that all. Perfect. Make you one later. I hate, like, how do you say that in English? The fucking, it's a beetroot. Beetroot?
Yeah.
Yeah, beetroot. So I hate beetroot. I don't like to eat it.
Yeah.
So when I started juicing with that, I just loved it, and I felt so much better about my digestion.
Yeah.
So that means I'm like, oh shit, like all these years, like not having that. And that was probably a vitamins that I wasn't having, right?
Totally. And it's also like beetroot is so good for vasodilation and increasing like nitrates.
Yeah, my aerobic capacity, just like, so every like morning I'll have some or.
Yeah. So like during, usually leading up to like competition, like you can do beetroot loading or like beets loading.
Yeah.
So, and you can have like a higher amount and try and increase your nitrate levels, and you know, it increases, you know, better blood flow and dilating the capillaries and getting more oxygen to the system. And yeah, it's very cool. So that, I love that. I love learning about that stuff. I'm like, in no way, shape or form am I like a qualified nutritionist or anything like that, but I do love to learn and I like to look into those things. I love listening to podcasts. I love furthering my knowledge, and I'll put it into play myself. Like I'll try these things myself, and if I find that they work well, then sure. I'm like, I'm not about to, you know, keep it from anybody. I'll let people know. It's like, yeah, I tried having a liter of beetroot every day for a week and see how I feel, and I felt great. So that's the way I feel.
Try and error, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess it's a lot of these things, I guess, anecdotal, but if we wait for peer-reviewed studies every 10 years to come out, then
it'll take a while.
It'll take a while. So there are things that you like look at and you think, oh, I don't really, I'm not drawn to doing that, or I'm not, that particular thing doesn't resonate with me, so I won't try it. But trying like things that are grown from the ground and, you know,
you can't go wrong.
Adaptogenic herbs and things of that nature. Sure.
Yeah. And you can't go wrong if it's food, right? Like, I mean, if it's clean food.
Yeah.
It's not like if you're eating something that's super transforming. It's
correct. Like, yeah.
It's something from the ground, from a tree, from or wherever.
Mushrooms and herbs and things like that. I think we can look at those, and they're quite, especially if they're, you know, like parasympathetic or nurturing herbs, things that help the adrenals and things that help to recreate balance inside the body when we're putting it through so much stress with so much training and volume. And even environmental stress and work stress and social stress, all those things, they're amounting to a particular, you know, they're filling the bucket, whereas we need something to scoop the water out of that bucket, and things that we put into our body can help us get there, and things that we do consciously can help us restore some of that balance. And it doesn't have to be a really hard thing for people to do. Like at the last thing you want to do is create more stress by trying to do these things that are supposed to de-stress you. So
journaling, yoga in the morning, meditation, take that healthy shot, take the water, all that, like, oh, that's already six things in it.
Yeah, exactly. I think you just gotta, for me, it's not a stress to think about anymore. And look, I would never say to anyone, if that's going to cause them more stress by trying to add in a whole bunch of these things, like start small, try and optimize sleep. Like if anything, like look at look at sunlight, just get a little bit of sunlight every day and try and expose your skin to the sun, because in the end, like, it's good for you, whether you think it gives you, you know, cancer or not. It's getting some sunlight is good for you. Getting, like, sleeping in optimal temperature is good for you. Just putting a blackout curtain on your window so you don't get light at the wrong time, it's good for you. So, or even just learning how to breathe through the nose relaxed is good for you. So,
so when you sleep out of the city, and when you're like in a cottage somewhere, you just like have such a different kind of sleep. Like, those little noises aren't there anymore.
Yeah, it's just really restful. So it's just getting people away from their devices as much as possible. I know people work on their devices, and so do I. But it's also being conscious and not being blind to the fact that sometimes staring at your phone for 10 hours a day, it's not healthy. Mm-mm. Like, I don't think we don't need peer-reviewed studies to show us that it's not healthy. We kind of understand that. So I think there's things that we can bypass, but that's just my opinion. And at the end of the day, whether you think it's good or not, then it's up to you, but I feel good. So I guess it's what makes you happy. And if you're happy and you're feeling good, and you can honestly tell me that you're waking up out of bed without obviously like crushing yourself in training the day before and saying that you feel good, great.
Yeah.
That's good for you.
That's awesome, man. Let's close it up with my four final questions.
Yeah, cool.
I supposed to send them, but I don't, but let's see if you want to think about them, you can
sure.
You can go for it. So who's number one? Who's your favorite female athlete of all times, and why?
Favorite female athlete of all time. You know, back in the day, I used to have like this big crush on Lane Beachley.
Who is that?
She's a Australian surfer. So, like back in the day when I was like a kid. Like, I used to look at Mark Occhialupo and
Lane Beachley,
and I was just like,
oh yeah, I know that.
Just as a kid, like I was like 10 years old, so yeah, maybe Lane Beachley.
She's 46 years old now.
Yeah, she's a lot older. Yeah, she's like she's a bit older than me, but yeah,
she looks pretty tanned.
Yeah. So back in the day, she was like a wicked surfer.
Yeah,
she probably still shreds now, but
for yeah. Sure, nice. And why? Just because
she was like
badass.
Yeah, she was just a wicked surfer, and like back then I was just all about just the surfing culture. I still love surfing today. I don't get to do as much as what I'd like to, but I'm not sure if you guys do it here, but when you got your textbook, like your books for school, we used to like wrap them in certain things, and I would put like photos of her and Mark Occhialupo all over them. So that's, yeah, I'd probably have to say her. But if I actually took a lot of time to think, there's probably some other people that I look up to a lot in terms of like female athletes. I love Tia. Yeah, Tia's, and she's a good friend of mine. So like she's very inspiring, like,
yeah,
with what she can do, like with the games and the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games. Like, she's just an inspiring person. And that's coming just from being so close with Tia. I think she's amazing.
Yeah, she looks pretty down to earth when you just hear
she's
her talk.
So, yeah, she's really cool. Like, yeah. There's no one like her. That's for sure.
We'll try to get her on sometime.
Yeah.
And what would be, question two, what would be the meal you would eat if that would be the only meal you could eat for the rest of your life? So every time of the day, that's all you eat.
Crepes.
Nice.
Crepes. Crepes with
real crepes, like the French ones, yeah. Or the pancake, like no, American pancake.
No, the real crepes, thin crepes with raspberries,
butter,
maple.
Just maple.
Maple,
nice.
Yeah, that's my favorite food. That's what I used to have every birthday when I was growing up. That's what I used to ask for, was crepes.
Yeah.
Well, we call them pancakes, but they're more of a crepe.
Yeah, they're a little thinner.
They're thinner, yeah. But if I was doing it for my favorite food, that would be what I do. But if I was doing it for like, literally that's what I had to eat, then I'd choose something else. But I don't know what that would be. It'd have to be something that's quite wholesome and a variety of certain nutrients. But it'd, if I was just like, for taste, I love crepes.
Some when I was in university, my nutrition teacher, he would say that the pizza would be like the go-to food when you kind of want to get everything, like veggies, carbs, cheese,
for protein. Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, something like that. If I was looking to eat something for the rest, yeah, something like that. It'll be a nice, healthy, homemade pizza or something like that.
Homemade.
Yeah.
In Montreal, we have nice pizza, though.
You do. Yes. You do. Or even like a homemade burger. Yes. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Third question. So what would be a James theme song? What would be you get into the gym and that's the song that just pops out?
Well, something that I've really been loving recently, and it's kind of come back, you know, I used to listen to it a while ago, but it was it's Zombie by the Cranberries.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, that'd be the one.
Yeah,
that'd be my song. If you'd ask my cousin what my song is, she'd probably say Rhythm of the Night. You remember Rhythm of the Night?
Rhythm of the Night.
But it's not even the song that I like listening to. She thinks it is, but it's not. It's and then she starts singing Rhythm is a Dancer, but that's not it either. But
the Cranberries is a little bit more soft. It's a little bit more of a I think it's a good travel in car song. Like you could hear it to Cranberries for hours, and you'll just like be on the same flow.
Yeah, that'd be the one.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. And last question, this one's a hard one. So if you would have to choose a country that you need to move to outside of Australia, which one would that be?
That's funny because Michelle asked me that question yesterday.
Because I asked her that. She said, I wouldn't go to the US.
She did say that.
She said Italy.
Yeah, she said Italy. Yeah. And then we were talking about, she goes, maybe even Norway or somewhere there. But yeah. For me, what I said to Michelle was I haven't been enough places yet to find somewhere that I would want to, you know, precisely go back to. But out of my current experience, Cape Town, South Africa.
Really?
Loved it. Loved it.
And there was like a good blend of like whatever you like also, like good coffee?
Great coffee.
Really? Huh.
Cheap food, good waves, lots to do. Great people. Yeah.
You can go there.
But then on the other hand, if I had to move somewhere tomorrow and go stay there for an extended period of time, Bali.
And I love it. I was in Thailand and was like, geez, I just wanted to go to Bali right after. Yeah.
Bali is my girlfriend Kayla and I's go-to place. Like, we love Bali.
Oh, you go there often?
Very regularly.
The Wanderlust CrossFit there.
Yeah, we go to Wanderlust, see Dave, and hang out and train and drink.
Dave's an insta babe.
Yeah, he is. He's very, he's very cute.
And his speedo just getting dumbbell snatches all the
time. Yeah. So like we love Bali, but maybe not the places that are like a lot of the tourists will tend to go to. Like they do go to Canggu, but we love Canggu, but we also love Ubud.
It's close to Australia too.
Very, 4 hours. So wow. I think at some point Kara and I will try and get over there for an extended period of time. It's just, you know, just with the dogs, it just makes it difficult because we have two little dogs. So
can you bring them there?
We could, but it's probably not somewhere we would like to take them just yet, just with like in terms of keeping them healthy and things like that. I don't think we could expose them to that. So, but maybe eventually we'll try and get across there and stay for as long as we can. Not sure how like visas and stuff work there, but I'd love to go hang out there for
12. Seems easy. Asia's pretty corrupted too, so.
Yeah, well, 12 to 24 months I think would be a great time to spend there. But then again, you know, it's so close for us. We probably don't even really need to do that. We can just go back and forward. We can spend 2 weeks there, come home for a month, go for another week. You know, it's just when we have the ability to do that, we'll probably do that because it's great surf, great coffee, great food, great people. And I think if you can look past what a lot of the tourists have done to particular areas of Bali, it's a fantastic place. Like, it's just really, really cool. Plus, there's also there's a Bali Dogs Foundation as well, so you can actually help with taking care of the Bali dogs that are
really
so that's something that I'd like to be more involved in.
There's not many places that have that in the world. Like, I know there's one place in Costa Rica, there's another in Thailand where I was, in Koh Tao.
Yeah,
if not, there's like it's pretty rare.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good thing. And like for me, seeing like animals that don't get like the love and the care that they kind of deserve, then they're kind of like it draws on you, so it makes me want to do something. So that would probably be something that I would like to get across, to do more of. So probably Bali if I had to choose, but very close with the places that I've visited so far, it'd, you know, probably be Cape Town behind that.
Nice.
Cape Town's great too.
Well, thanks for doing this, James.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd enjoyed the podcast today, take a screenshot of your phone, share it on social media, and leave us a 5-star rating with a comment below. It makes such a difference when everybody gets involved and shares the love. Thank you so much. Until next time.